It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
the Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill, the pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher Boy Shasky. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Curry dribbles in the paint, goes all the way, scooped him a hoop over White. It's up and good. 104-99, 2:23 to go in the game.
Do you believe? Do you believe? Can you hit me with the Buddy Buckets dagger? Can you hit me with the Buddy Buckets dagger? Give me the Buddy Buckets. The dagger from Steph. Jason Tatum, wake up! Wake up, Tatum, wake up!
Curry gets Horford. Shot clock at 7. 49 seconds left. Pass to Buddy Hield. White corner 3. Swish! 111-104. Time out, Boston!
Do you believe? Tim Roy on the call right here on 95.7 The Game. And oh baby, do you believe? It's coming together, folks. 7-1, this team is all the way bought in. They get a big win last night in Boston. I know Boston was shorthanded, but you know what? You don't control that. You control how you play. And right now the Warriors are controlling the way they play, and they're playing damn good basketball. 53 rebounds last night, only 11 turnovers. They're taking care of the basketball, the 50-50 balls. They're hustling. They're grabbing offensive rebounds. Can't give enough love to Kevon Looney, Buddy Buckets. They are a full team. Strength in numbers is back, folks, and they're rolling right now at 7-1. Good morning, everybody out there. Get off their graveyard shift. Hopefully you're having a great morning. Everybody in traffic. You already know business booming with the overnight dancers. We don't need to talk about that. The cops, the firefighters, the teachers, the students. Shasky's feeling it. Look at Shasky. He's feeling it right now. He's like, I haven't seen this guy smile for an entire show in months.
It was just such a beautiful brand of basketball, and the way that they won that game, the back and forth, and, you know, nothing really went their way early on, and they just resilient, and they just kept chipping away, and then they went on a little run, and then, you know, to credit Boston, they fired back too. And I thought the third quarter was pretty much all Boston, even into the fourth. And then the Warriors found a way to not only stop the bleeding, but then just trade blows. And it was like a massive prize fight. I loved everything about this win. And for them to execute down the stretch, get stops, make really good decisions in the half court, and execute the way that they did with a variety of guys playing excellent. Like, yes, they're led by Steph Curry. Looney made plays. Buddy Hield made plays. Wiggins made plays. Mm-hmm. Draymond was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a team win. And the thing that I've always loved about watching this team is when they're rolling, you know who gets the ball? Similar to the Shanahan offense, the open guy. They just make the pass to the open guy. They play a brand of basketball that if you were going to show a bunch of third, fourth, and fifth graders how to play ball, this is the way to play ball.
That's well said. That's well said. You're spot on there. You bring up the third quarter where they get outscored 41-31. And, you know, Boston makes 10 threes. The Warriors only make 4. They started bombing. Tatum's has 17 in the quarter. He plays the entire third quarter, scores 17. And you're like, damn, Boston's got so much firepower. And then they take a 95-88 lead in the fourth quarter. And they're up 95-88 with 6:14 left in the game. And they're thinking, damn, this one got away. Damn, is this one going to slip? Warriors had it. But a play that's going to get lost in the sauce, that's going to get forgotten about, is Derek White tries to isolate Stephen Curry on a switch. And he's like, oh, I'm going to take this guy for a dance. And Steph Curry comes up with a steal. Comes up with a steal. Great defensive play. Boston has a chance to go up 9 or 10 in that situation. Steph comes up with a steal. They get out and run, and Wiggins hits the layup. Now you're down 5. You stabilize everything. Tatum forces up a 3. Curry gets to the free throw line, and now you're back in the basketball game. But remember that moment, 95-88. Derek White with the ball, and he's rolling. Derek White, he's not the same dude from the 2022 NBA Finals. Remember, he was like the weak link for the Boston Celtics?
Mm-hmm.
That dude is a whole different animal now.
Well, he hit early, then he went a little cold, and then he hit late.
Yep.
He's a very good player.
He's a very good two-way player. But he tried to go at Steph, and Steph comes up with a steal that will get lost in the sauce in yesterday's game. We'll talk about Buddy Hield's 3. We'll talk about Steph's offense. We'll talk about Wiggs and Looney's offensive rebounding. But that steal right there by your leader, Stephen Curry, to come up with that defensive play in that moment down 7— helped stabilize that basketball game because it was starting to get away from him.
Yeah.
You're down seven, but he comes up with a defensive. I know Fess is out there listening. He's going to love this. A defensive play. Warriors are playing so well. Chris Mullin's talking about defense right now. I'm like, you are hype, Mully? He's an offensive gym rat. He's talking about defense, but Curry comes up with that defensive play, and he helps stabilize the game, and you get that from your leader. Boom. That's big time there. The Warriors end up going on a 16-3 run, and they can run away with it 118-112.
I think about this all the time because I got a message from a friend this morning that's going to be going through a surgery. And I want to give a shout out to Chris Cajero. Great man. He's going to have a surgery tomorrow. We're all praying for you. I love you, buddy. And diehard sports fan. And I think about, you know, people when they're going through things in life, whatever it is. I know we just had a lot of elections and various propositions locally, statewide, national. People are upset, you know. And if sports can distract you and make you feel better for whatever's going on in your life, isn't that what it's all about? And I'm watching this Warrior team, and I think about the joy that they bring to people when they play this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's infectious. And the bounce in your step you have the next day after watching them, there's just something special. And so as I close the loop, Chris, I love you, buddy. I hope you get better. Good luck with the surgery tomorrow. I know everything's going to go great. He is a huge Warrior fan, huge Warrior fan. And he just keeps saying, they play a great brand of ball.
They're going to be rocking and rolling Tuesday night when they get back into town for the return of Klay Thompson. That place is going to be insane. Let's go to Larry in the city. Larry,
what's up, Larry?
What's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, listen, I want to put this out there for Jason Tatum. You know that old saying by Danny Green on the Cardinals? We thought the Warriors were who they thought they are. He's such a crybaby. Oh, we didn't beat the Warriors. Oh, my God, I didn't play the Olympics. They played me in the Olympics. Oh, too bad. With that, I'm out. Have a good day, guys.
All right, Larry.
I don't ever want to hear from Jason Tatum ever again.
Well, we're going to hear from him right now because, as Fezzi said, the game within the game, how's it going to go? Where Tatum was asked afterwards if the Olympic drama was on his mind during the game.
It wasn't on my mind. Just another Wednesday, another game, another opportunity to come in and try to be the best player I can be, and another day to just try to get a win.
He's full of baloney.
Well, we don't believe you.
He dropped a couple F-bombs in the pressure, too. Did you hear that, Spadone? Yeah, he dropped a couple F-bombs about just being Tatum and not being anybody different. Here's what he said about the Warriors and what they did better than the Celtics last night.
Yeah, I think they just did a good job of being more physical, and obviously they were, you know, blitzing all of the ball screens I came off, and we weren't, or I could speak for myself, a little rushed in the first half, and I think in the second half just accepted it and played with more patience and made the right read more often than not.
Well, Joe Mazzulla, who wants fighting back in the NBA, what do you think went differently in this matchup with the Warriors?
They're physical, so they force you to fight for your space. You know, they have active hands, so I think in the first half they got a ton of deflections. They were able to get some stuff there, but I thought we did a better job of handling the physicality in the second half. And I just have to put, again, we talk physicality, it's just as much as defense as offense. So it took us a little while to get adjusted to that. Once we did, we executed really well, and then it just came down to a couple possessions at the end.
And that's Joe Mazzulla, and that's the Celtics, Shasky. That's the Celtics last night.
God, they were just so awesome.
They were awesome. Let's go to Theo in the East Bay.
So happy.
Theo, what's happening?
Yes, sir. What's up, boys? I'm fired up like you. Vontae, man, that was a great win, man. But Steve Kerr going to GP2, man. What a move, man. Defense looked great and giving Looney a lot of minutes for the defensive end, man. Great win yesterday, and you know what? The chef was out yesterday. He had Steve Kerr's back. He heard the boost. Steph Curry wasn't going to let that happen. You know what? Last year's team, they don't win this game. And you know what? I'm fired up for this next two games. I know Cleveland's a little bigger, so we'll see what Steve Kerr does. But 3-0 on this road trip. It's on the table. Cheers, boys.
All right, Theo. Hey, listen, the Cavs, they took it to the Warriors last year. Remember that? Twice in a week.
Oh, yeah. Donovan Mitchell and Draymond got into it.
Yep.
I was at that game. They kicked our butts.
They kicked our butts twice
in
Cleveland and at Chase Center. So they did have Kenny Atkinson. They were playing better offensively. They have a nice starting five. Isaac Okoro is going to be shadowing Stephen Curry. Evan Mobley's big, but that's Draymond Green. He's going to get into him. Jared Allen to be there at the five. That'd be TJD. Then you get Buddy Buckets off the bench. But Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, quick guys. So Andrew Wiggins, Jonathan Kuminga, Draymond Green. I wouldn't be surprised if Gary Payton II started against Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm with you on that. And are you seeing some of the nicknames for GP2?
I saw this last one. Oven mitt.
You put him on the hottest player.
The
I kind of like that.
I'm going to bring that up to him. Trust me, I bring these nicknames up to these guys to see if we get approval. By the way, just finding out that there are still some tickets remaining for next Tuesday night. What? No.
Say that on air.
No, don't say it.
The Ove Glove.
The Ove Glove?
Yeah.
That's actually a real thing, too. The Ove Glove. It's like a little nice glove that you use for... You haven't seen the infomercials for those?
No,
it's like they use
don't watch commercials.
The same material that's used for like firefighters' outfits that's like heat resistant. They use it on the Ove Glove.
Oh man. Some tickets still remain for Clay's return next Tuesday. Warriors.com. Warriors.com.
Can't wait.
That's
Jason Kidd, 9 o'clock, by the way.
Monday.
After Baldy.
J. Kidd. We'll move back to break for that one, just in case.
I just, you know, I'm a big believer in, like, your eyes don't lie to you, you know? Are there times where you're watching something and it's not sustainable? Absolutely. Like, stuff happens in sports, you know? Rick Ankiel comes up and he's one of the best pitching prospects in the game, and he, like, short circuits and he can't throw a strike. You know, Chuck Knobloch can't throw over to first base. Navarro Bowman gets hurt, and he just doesn't have the same athleticism and speed that he had before. Mike Iupati was a great example. Broke his leg, and he just didn't play the same. You know, stuff does happen. Russell Wilson, you know, not looking anywhere near the player that he was at the beginning of his Seattle run. But I'm watching this Warrior team, and I'm like, my eyes are telling me this team is playing a brand of basketball on both ends of the floor that is super connected. Even when Tatum was hitting tough shots, they were contesting without fouling.
Yep.
Even when they were hopping the ball around, and there was a possession where they couldn't get a defensive rebound, the Warriors, and it was like...
I know what you're talking
about. Minute and a half. Eventually, I think it was either a Derek White or a Pritchard three-pointer. But they played great D for like a minute and a half, uninterrupted. And they were scrambling, and they were contesting, and they were closing out, and they weren't leaving their feet. And I'm saying to myself, like, all of these little things... are telling me they're a much improved team. Well, they are.
Attention to detail. They were running Boston off the three-point line, and as you mentioned, contesting the shots. They limited Boston to 23-point attempts in that first half. Now, Boston got the flow rolling in the third quarter. You knew they were going to make a run. They weren't just going to go out like that. They're the Boston Celtics. They're defending champs. They got players. They get paid, too. And so they went crazy in the third quarter. But down the stretch, crunch time, last 5 minutes of the game, I believe the Warriors outscored the Celtics, if I'm not mistaken, in the last 5 minutes of crunch time. If I'm not mistaken, it could have been 26-8 or 23-5 or something like that. I got the numbers mixed up.
Okay.
But basically, they dominated down a stretch, which is, I think, another element to this team. We've been desperate to see them in adverse situations down the stretch. How's Steve Kerr going to work the rotation when Steph gets back? Now, we saw a close game against Houston. Steph was in the street clothes, but they were able to win that game. You know, they were able to win that game with Brandon Podziemski making big buckets down the stretch in the fourth quarter, and then, of course, Kuminga taking over in overtime. And you don't have Draymond Green and Steph Curry and Podziemski in overtime. They're on the sidelines. Draymond and Podziemski fouled out. Steph Curry was out with the ankle injury. But didn't you see him last night with Steph? What's the final five going to look like? And you had Loondog out there, trusted agent, right? Champion. You had Draymond out there doing his thing. You had Steph rolling. And it was Buddy Buckets alongside Andrew Wiggins. Now, that may change. It may be JK at some point. It may be GP. You saw Steve Kerr was subbing in. GP for defense, Buddy for offense. When you have a team like this that is deep, you can do things like that. Not like still Steve Kerr. He's doing a hell of a job coaching his team. And he's got the message sent to him. How about this? How about him yelling at Steph after a turnover?
Oh, I love that.
And then Boston goes for a layup the other way.
It was a bad... He forced it way ahead. He shouldn't have.
Here's what Steve Kerr said about yelling at Steph.
Yeah, and the beauty of Steph is I can yell at him. And he lets me yell at him, which sets a tone for the rest of the team. And I yelled at him. It was a 5-point swing. They came down and hit a three. And... He accepted it, and he knew it. But, look, this is a theme for our team. We can't be the same team we were 5-6 years ago and give away 5-6 possessions in the name of creating chaos. And everybody else is playing fast and shooting threes, too, these days. And, in fact, you know, Boston shot, I don't know, 20 more threes than we did in the second half. And So it's tough to win if you're giving away possessions. And so I've been all over Steph and Draymond. It's incumbent upon them because they're our leaders and they're the guys who handle the ball the most. They've got to cut back on their decisions, bad decisions like that one. And to their credit, they've done so.
The last few years, my biggest gripe in game when it comes to Steve Kerr, in game, I'm going in game. Like if we're just like, and I'm critiquing, right. I freely admit this is like a nitpick, but like I felt that he was a tick like slow on the trigger of when to sub guys in, sub guys out. I also didn't love certain combinations of players that he would put out on the floor. I either just disagreed with the flow and the feel and all that, and I just didn't like those combos. Now, to be fair, I don't think he was choosing from a lot of great options.
Right.
But I thought he was a hair slow the last 2 years. Yesterday's a great example. They start off slow, and I'm saying, like, all right, we need a timeout or a sub or something here. And I feel like his sense of urgency and feel for what the team needs in that moment has been so much better this year. He went straight to Buddy Hield in GP2, and I was like, oh, bang, Buddy hits a shot. Bang, GP2's all up in it, gets a couple of turnovers right away, like all up in guys. And you could feel Boston felt the pressure in their face right away when he checked in. There's just something about Steve Kerr this year. I felt it since the first game. He feels like he's on it this year.
He's pressing all the right buttons. He's pressing all the right buttons so far. And down the stretch, knowing that, you know what? Looney's having an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ride old man Kevon Looney. And I know his family doesn't like not calling him old, but old man Loon, he's a vet. He's been here. I can't believe he's been here for a decade. But he rode him down a stretch. All right, Buddy Hill's got the hot hand offensively. He can shoot. It's spacing. We need his spacing. Let's go to Buddy Hill. All right? But you're so spot on. He's pushing all the way. Even in the overtime, to go with Kevon Looney and Kyle Anderson Saturday night in Houston. And, like, I didn't love to sub out J.K. on the final possession without a timeout because I know J.K. could get to the rack. I was scratching my head at that move. But for the most part, Steve Kerr has pressed all the right buttons. Now, Steph Curry, he was asked about Kerr yelling at him.
Yeah.
Here's what Steph said.
It's a mindset that, one, I want to be coached just like everybody else. So I don't get sensitive about getting yelled at if you make a dumb play. Especially it led to a three on the other end. It's avoidable. And we have to be able to take care of possessions, especially against good teams. And one, I didn't have another turnover after that, which was nice. But two, it's just like a mindset that everybody has to be committed to. Me and Draymond are going to have turnovers. We have the ball in our hands a lot. We try to take some chances here and there, but it's the kind of turnovers like the one like that where it's, even if Wiggs catches it, I think it's throwing it to Wiggs, it's still a tough play. So just let the action happen and keep the game under control. Win the possession game. It's always big for us.
So he gets it. Kerr gets it. The leaders get it. And everybody's going to fall in line behind that. When you're a leader like Steph Curry is getting it, it's just like Tim Duncan and Popovich. Popovich would yell at Tim Duncan all the time, and Tim Duncan accepted it. And other players say, wait a minute, Tim Duncan's a first ballot Hall of Famer, top 10 player, one of the greatest power forwards we've ever seen in this league, and he's getting berated by a head coach and accepting it? Then who the hell am I to talk back to the coach, right? So everybody on this team has followed the line. And you hear it from Buddy, you hear it from Loon, you hear it from everybody. Steph's our leader. So when they see that, they said, okay, we all should be able to accept criticism then. And that helps Steve Kerr coach even better. And it empowers Steve Kerr as the head coach. And it empowers Jerry Stackhouse and Terry Stotts. And now they're all in unison. Now they're all in sync.
It's so funny you bring that up because, like, I have a – and I'm taking a quick right turn. We'll get right back to the Warrior part of it. But I'm umpiring the game the other day. This is a, you know, 9U game. And, you know, kids are making mistakes. And I'm the umpire. And I have the belief that even almost through high school, to a degree, it's still instructional. I'm like, Steph Curry has a coach. Steph Curry's learning new, and I'll say this to people. Steph Curry is learning new nuances of the game, and they're critiquing him. And your son is 9, or your daughter is 9. Like, take a deep breath. Like, we can explain what a balk is before we go on. And I guess the bigger point that I'm going at is that the beauty of the greatest players ever, Tom Brady, Jerry Rice, Montana, Steph, they are allowed to be coached.
Coachable.
The ones that think that they know everything have stopped growing, mm-hmm. and they plateau no matter what level it is. And so, yeah, that's what makes them different and special. I will give Steve Kerr this too. How many times did I text the group thread, don't like this lineup last year? Don't like this combination. Don't like this. Get this guy in there. I find myself saying that so few while I'm watching these games. Wow, love Kyle Anderson with this combo. Wow, love Jonathan Kuminga right here, right now. Love what I'm seeing from Pajemski with this group of guys. Like, he is pulling all the right strings right now.
You know what? But it's also, too, I think Steve Kerr just trusts his bench a lot more than he did in the past.
It's that simple?
Because I don't think it's that simple, but I think when you have a lot of youngsters on a team that haven't contributed to championships, it takes a lot for a coach to trust. And so when you think about what was coming off the bench the last few years, there wasn't a lot of trust. There wasn't a lot of trust, and I thought Steve Kerr had trust issues with the JKs, with the Moses Moody's. How many calls did we take about playing JK or Moody more? You know what I'm saying?
Quietly really good last night.
But I think this transition started post All-Star break. Post All-Star break, Clay shifted to the bench. Whether he liked it or not, he shifted to the bench. Pod started. And then TJD started playing. Remember, TJD didn't play basically for the first three. We didn't know who he was. It was like TJD, Trey Jackson Davis, okay. And then he starts games. And he starts playing well. And I think that shift right there, it started last season with Steve Kerr saying, okay, I need to trust these youngsters. They're going to make mistakes, but I need to play them to play through these mistakes because they need reps and game action. And so I think it actually started last year post All-Star break, and you're starting to see it come follow through here. Now you're getting Moses Moody to start games. GP2's coming off the bench. JK started games. He's coming off the bench. He's empowering his bench, but he's also empowering the youngsters as well because I just think he trusts them a lot more. I think there were some trust issues the last couple of years with his bench because it was a lot of youngsters on that bench.
Yeah, there was. It's just the way that they've built this team, it just feels like they finally got a variety of dudes that all understand that, like, if we're winning, we'll all be playing well. Yeah. As opposed, like, as whoever, who said it, right. Agendas?
No
and
agendas.
I don't think that's a Clay-directed thing. I'm talking team-wide. Draymond doesn't seem like he's on an agenda. Dray feels like he is, like, committed to being on his best behavior.
Well, champion to change.
Yeah.
He admitted it. Last year, I stunk and I blew it for my team. They won 46 games. He missed 27. He knows it. So, you know, it was a lot going on last season. Mm. It's not just Clay. GP2 wasn't healthy. Wiggins had personal issues. He had injuries. JK was trying to find his way. Pods and TJD are their first year in the NBA. They don't know how to travel as NBA players. You know what I mean? This is their first go-round. Steph is playing, but he's sticking play. It's clunky around here. Looney wasn't in the best shape last season. Looney admitted that. You know how he admitted that? Because he came back this year 30 pounds lighter. So that tells you everything you know about Looney last season. Chris Paul, was it a great fit? Probably not. He was a professional. But it wasn't the greatest fit. So there was a lot going on last year with this basketball team, and it got back to being a team basketball. This team is rolling right now. Look, we got to be happy about the Celtics win. We'll see what happens tomorrow night in Cleveland, but I'm fired up on where this thing is going. BPA, Miguel, Samita, Adam, we're going to get to everybody here. Everybody. Law Murray's coming up on the other side. Let's stagger Law Murray. Let's take a couple calls before we get the Law, and then we'll get everybody else on hold. But we'll get a couple guys. Couple people in here before we get to Law Murray on the morning roast, and that's all brought to you by his Law Murray wrote the power rankings in the Athletic. Now I'm going to read power rankings for the first time in years because of Shasky here, but that's coming up brought to you by the Inn at the Tides. Picture yourself, Shasky, it's Spadoni and Lubman in a cozy room by the fire, sipping hot chocolate, enjoying breathtaking views of Bodega Bay with the lobster roll in the box on the table. Doesn't that sound good? Doesn't it feel great?
It does.
This time of year is magical. At the Inn at the Tides. And you know what? They got a special midweek rate starting at just $159 per night. Book your escape now. InnAtTheTides.com.
Bay Area is Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game. Take it away, Bonte.
All right, JK, solid game for you last night. 17 minutes, 57 seconds for him off the bench, but he plays some solid defense, 4 rebounds, 10 points, going to the cup. I like where JK's at, 2 or 3 from the 3-point line, being very selective there, and he's buying into his role next to Buddy Hield off that Warriors bench. All right, before we get to Law Murray of the Athletic and get through his power rankings, this is going to be great. I haven't talked to Law in a long time. Let's go to, I'm going to start with Adam of the City. We'll ride a tat-tat. Let's ride a tat-tat on these calls. Adam of the City, you start off first. What's up?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I just wanted to talk about and highlight how impressed I was with the defensive intensity from the jump last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're 8 games into the season, and last night looked like a playoff game. It was crazy. You got people hustling. Tatum's throwing Wiggins off because he's playing hard defense on him. And just kudos to Wiggs for his defense. And the last thing I wanted to say was just how good the bench is. Every member's contributing. Slow-mo hitting 3 threes in a row. Buddy, obviously, Kuminga. I'm really impressed with this team. And this type of formula is built for success for the rest of the season, I think.
I appreciate it. Appreciate that call. That's a good point. The defensive intensity right away, Shasky. Stackhouse's imprint on the defensive end of the floor alongside Ron Adams sitting hard, doubles, blitzing the screener and pick and roll, just blitz. You know what? We're just going to blitz your ass. Do something with the basketball. Now, people will adjust to it. Teams will adjust. And I'm eager to see what the counter is to that adjustment.
But I think I keep going back to like the legs. The legs of this team seem to be so much quicker mm-hmm. than in years past, because how many times did they trap at the top? I'm talking the second Tatum caught the ball at the top of the key, and then they hustled back and scrambled. There were multiple 4-on-5s in the other way for Boston, mm-hmm. and yet they didn't lose like a guy going straight to the rim and give up, you know, easy buckets. I think in years past, boom, 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 2 or 3 passes, and the Warriors were giving up a backdoor layup or a dunk.
No doubt.
That's not the case anymore.
No doubt. Let's go to BPA real quick before we get to Law Murray.
Oh, BPA.
BPA. BPA. Talk to me, BPA. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? I don't have a great connection here, so apologies if this is not going to work. But yeah.
Not today, buddy. Connection was terrible. Contact Floyd Water Plumbing Drain at floydwater.net.
It's hard when you're calling from one of your 27 rooms in your mansion. I'm sure he doesn't get Wi-Fi all the way there.
Oh, gosh. Let's go to my
man. Assume that he's an entrepreneur mogul.
All right, let's bring in Law Murray, man. And look, I enjoy talking to guys like Law Murray, Evan Barnes, and because I met these guys at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention, and we're all at the bottom, right? We're just trying to find a way to get into the business or whatnot. And from afar, Law Murray's become Mr. Clipper. He's everything with the Clippers. Beat writer, L.A., you know it, you name it, NBA stuff. He's always locked into it. And, Law, I got to say, as we bring you in here to the Morning Roast, and good morning to you as we bring him in on the River Islands guest line, my man Joe Shasky here goes, I'm looking at the power rankings. And, you know, I don't read a lot of power rankings. So I'm not going to lie. And Shasky goes, I'm a sucker for power rankings. This guy named Law Murray wrote these power rankings. He has the Warriors at 4. And I start chugging. He goes, it's this journalist named Law. I was like, Law Murray? The Law? Oh, I know Law. And next thing you know, we make the call. We bring you on here. So, Law, good morning to you, man. You're doing a hell of a job covering the Clippers.
Hey, good morning. And thank you for reading the power rankings. This is the first time in my life that I'm doing it. I feel you. I don't read them a whole lot either, but I'm reading them Johns now.
And you're a Philly guy. You're a Philly guy, as you just gave that away by saying John. And, of course, you have the Warriors at 4 in the early season. So you follow the NBA as well as anybody out there. What have you seen from the Warriors that make you put them in tier 1 of your power rankings?
Man, they winning games, like, straight up. It's a meritocracy for me. Like, I feel like a lot of people look at these power rankings and they immediately are going to the spring. It's like the NBA Finals is starting next week. I mean, the NBA Cup is starting next week. I know some teams are going to raise the banner for that, you know. But this ain't the same conversation. I just want to see who's playing well and who's not. Like, the teams that we had high expectations for last month, if they're falling short of those expectations, well, they need to earn their way back up, you know. And the teams that are exceeding those expectations by any measure, I'm gonna rank them positively. And, hey, like, if things catch up to them, I'll see it in real time. That's why we do this every single week. And so it's been 8 games. Golden State's lost 1. I was in the building for the one they lost. Otherwise, they've alternated extreme blowouts with with impressive performances, either because they beat a team like Boston last night or because they won shorthanded, which is not something they were great at last year when Steph missed games.
Yeah. What are you seeing specifically this year that you, maybe you didn't see last year? And I'll give you a second to think about it. Because, like, for example, I'm shocked with what I'm seeing from Buddy Hield. Now, maybe I wasn't paying attention prior, but he feels like a rejuvenated man. He's just one of many elements. But is there something that sticks out to you?
Well, I'll tell you about Buddy Hield, man. That dude is Mitch Richmond and reincarnated. So all the Sacramento, Golden State Connect people who've been around that area for a long time, y'all should start looking at Buddy Hield that way. I'm just saying. I mean, he ain't the scorer Mitch is, but from a shooting perspective, there's few you can hold a candle to Buddy. But I'm not surprised by Buddy. I'm shocked at how effective Golden State's defense has been, even with Steve Kerr rolling out all these dudes. Look, every year, and Steve will be the first to point this out, every year that the Golden State Warriors have meant something, it's because they defended at an elite level. They did not do that last year. They were inconsistent with that. Obviously, the year before, I think Chase Center should have earned Defensive Player of the Year votes because they defended really well there, and the defense did not travel at all 2 years ago. This year, they are, I think, only Oklahoma City is better defensively. And the big key is last year was arguably the weakest year that Golden State ever had when it came to forcing turnovers under Steve Kerr. And they have bounced back in a big way this year in that category. They are doing such a great job of causing havoc. And it's because of the personnel. Like, they play a bunch of active hands players. They've got some length. And they've got the intelligence. I mean, Steph Curry and Draymond Green have been around playing together under Steve Kerr for a decade. It shows on that end of the floor. When, like, there's not a lot of weak points on that. I mean, there are weak points on the defense. Like, I think that their rebounding on the defensive end is going to need to improve after a while. They can't be bottom 10 there if they have games or their turnovers do dry up defensively. But they're doing a great job, not just forcing turnovers, but Golden State, they have been some hacks the last few years. You've seen Steve Kerr get upset about the free throw differential. We saw it in the Lakers playoff series 2 years ago. They've been okay in that department, especially considering how often they force turnovers. That's been a shock to me. Not a shock, but it was terrible last year. And they have – shout out to Mike Dunleavy. He got guys, you know, that were going to improve that specific area of their defense. And you're not even seeing DeAnthony Melton. He, hopefully my guy gets healthy. So in other words, they can still be not just better, but sustainable over the course of the season.
We're talking to Law Murray of The Athletic, NBA writer for The Athletic. Does a great job covering the league, the Clippers. He's here on the River Islands guest line on the Morning Roast. And I want to get back to Buddy for a second because you're a Philly guy, like we just mentioned. You watched the league. What happened in Philadelphia, and what happened in Indiana? Because Indiana plays at this breakneck pace, up and down. You would think that Buddy would fit that system perfectly. Yet they flipped him at the deadline. He goes to Philadelphia, and he sees about 20 minutes a game, but then he doesn't play in the postseason, and he has that one quarter, which he explodes. It doesn't really have an impact in that series against the New York Knicks. What were we missing about Buddy Hield, and what happened in Indiana and Philadelphia to where it didn't work out for Buddy?
I think Indiana just needed to reshuffle some pieces, you know. I mean, Buddy was a guy who was expiring, so they got some value back for Buddy. I don't think he played poorly in Indiana, you know. Like, he was starting. He was someone that Rick Carlisle, a guy who's hard on guys, leaned on, you know. I think that if they would have been able to keep Buddy, that would have been nice. But you see Indiana right now. They have so many dudes. Unfortunately, they're down backup centers, but they got so many dudes to play, man. And so I just think Indiana was like, hey, we got a guy in a contract year. Let's get an asset back. Let's not lose him for nothing. And in Philadelphia, honestly, I feel like Buddy would have been better if he would have been able to play with Joel Embiid more in the regular season. I thought Buddy was good for them there. He was a shooter that team needed. Like, the Sixers lacked shooting. But, you know, things get out of whack when your big piece, your star, comes back at such a tight window of critical time. Like, Joel Embiid didn't get back last year until April, you know, as far as like the middle of the year when Buddy got to the Sixers. And so Nick Nurse's rotations were kind of a mess in the playoffs last year. And the guy who was affected was Buddy Hield, a guy who was probably on his way out anyway. We all knew who Philly was looking forward to bringing in, you know, yeah, on the wing. And so all that benefits the Golden State Warriors. Again, like, Buddy hasn't gotten a chance to play for a team that plays both at the pace that the Warriors do, but also they move the basketball. Like, the Golden State Warriors are not an ISO team. They're not a heavy pick-and-roll team. And so Buddy Hield is a guy who was going to fit really well offensively. The question was going to be, how well does he fit defensively? Buddy's got some really good hands. Like, he hasn't always played in defenses that encourage that kind of defense, but Buddy fits on both ends of the floor for them, and that's going to be huge for Steve Kerr, because he knows that no matter what they ask Buddy to do, he's going to fit, and him coming off the bench is cheating. You know, Buddy's a guy who is used to starting games. You know, he started a lot of games in Indiana. He didn't start that much in Philly, but Buddy's in a role, and I think when guys know what their role is, even if they know, hey, I'm coming off the bench every night, cool, you know, they're given a better chance of being consistent, and you're getting the best version of Buddy Hield right now.
You know, whenever you give an opinion, there's always pushback from the well-actually crowd, as I call it, the know-it-alls. I'm just shocked that there are certain dynasties or just organizations that are coming out of a dynasty. We will give them the benefit of the doubt until their superstar player is no longer playing. I think of New England, right? Like, New England, every year, it's New England, you know, the Patriots. You know, just as long as Brady and Belichick are there. Why have Steve Kerr and Steph Curry not been granted the benefit of the doubt from the naysayers? Because it feels like at every turn, people have been trying to close the casket shut on Steph Curry. And I think he's in the middle of the greatest post-35 run for a guard ever.
I'll give the naysayers a little bit of credit. Golden State's had, before this year, 1 year to really be happy about since Kevin Durant left in 2019 and Chase Center opened. And that first year, Chase was terrible. So, yeah, you know, when you look at one good year out of five, I think people were like, yeah, like, no one's saying that Steph isn't great or isn't impactful, but we are saying that the Golden State Warriors have, you know, their dynasty post KD is one good year and three pretty mid years and one terrible year. This is the kind of season they're off to the kind of start that makes people be like, all right, look, they have been inconsistent, thoroughly inconsistent, three out of the last 4 years, but because they're capable of something like 2022, you got to fear them. Mm-hmm. I think that also, I don't really care about the naysayers too much. Y'all shouldn't either. For one, y'all franchise has won championships up there, and for two, I see a lot of national TV games for a team that was 10th in the West last year. Whoever don't believe in the Warriors, there's a lot of people who want the Warriors to be really good because they're going to be parking that national TV table across the scorers table damn near every week. So whatever the naysayers are saying, the brand is still strong, in my opinion, and if anything, the Warriors are doing their part to actually play to it.
No doubt. Law Murray, thanks for the time today, brother. We'll see you. You'll be back up here Monday, November 18th, right? Or no, excuse me, the Warriors are going down there to Intuit Dome. They're going down to go see the wall of that new beautiful dome that Steve Ballmer's built. The Clippers will come back to the Bay Area. It's going to be a while before they come back up here.
Last game of the season.
Is it the last game of the season? Yep. Yeah, wow. April 13th. They'll come back up here to Chase Center for a 12:30 game. But I'll try to get down there into a dome, man. That place looks beautiful. Law, thanks so much for the time and continued blessed success at The Athletic, brother. Proud of you.
Hey, thank you so much, Monte. Proud of you too, man. Have a good one.
You too. And you got to do fan law. You got to do fan Shasky. Shasky knows who you are.
You're power ranked in my contender mode for journalists covering the NBA right now.
Law Murray, man, bringing in the heat. He said a lot, man. He said a lot there. What's your big takeaway from Law?
The Buddy Hield thing is not some random outlier. Like, he believes in Buddy Hield.
Yes.
I mean, did you not come away thinking that?
Said he has great heads, always been a great shooter, and he didn't get to play with Joel Embiid. That's how Nick Nurse, a player like that, who's having this type of impact, just slips through the cracks. It happened to the team that we love.
We always talk about this, like, there are some bad, poorly run teams in professional sports.
Philadelphia is one of them. Absolutely. Can we admit it? Even though Philadelphia has Joel Embiid, they've botched that entire process that they've had. They've botched it. They've
when
completely
they
botched
Tobias
it.
Harris and Max, I laughed at everyone.
Well, yeah, I
mean,
I did
that
too.
Was one of the dumbest things you could have done.
And then they flip it, and they give Paul George and Max.
Yeah, well,
they got blown out yesterday by the Clippers. Blown out. It was unbelievable.
Everybody laughing right now at the Rocket victory for the Warriors. I think the Rockets are going to be...
Rockets just beat the Knicks the other day.
Or out, like, in or above the box all year. So, like, I'm telling you right now, the Rockets will be...
No, they're tough.
I think they're going to be a fringe playoff team all year. Everyone wants to, you know, say that they stink. I don't think they stink.
No, they don't stink.
I like the Rockets.
You know what they've done? They've won two straight games since that Warriors loss. They beat the New York Knickerbockers 109-97, Monday night. It beat him. Look, Dylan Brooks had 13. Shingun, 25-14. Van Vliet actually had a good game. Then they turned around and beat the Spurs by 27.
Well, Wemby got yammed on. I don't know if you saw that dunk.
I missed that dunk.
Oh my God.
I missed that dunk. I didn't see that highlight.
Well, it was almost as bad as Mark Few's son getting dunked on.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to bring that up.
For the 4 seconds he was on the floor.
Dude, and they won by 40. That's the big takeaway.
I also have a beef with Mark Few because his bio says he's 6'3", and there's just no way. There's just no way. I've stood on the hardwood floor across from Mark Few, and he's not 6'3". You're taller than 6'3". He is not.
You're saying he's a few inches short?
That's just brilliant. Brilliant. His kid is listed at 6 feet, and there's just no way he's 6 feet.
He got oh my God.
So hard.
It was so bad. It was great.
It was great.
It was nepotism
at its finest.
It was unreal. Wemby shoots too many threes. What's going on with Wemby?
You know what's funny is I actually thought that Wemby, he's going to be this freak to watch, and this. As a watch. I'm talking about as a watch.
A little underwhelming?
Oh, I'm taking Ja as a watch over Wemby.
What about Chet?
I like Chet. See, Chet's got like attitude.
Chet. Yeah, Chet's... So
I think Chet's way nastier than I gave him credit for.
Through the grapevine, when they came out here to play, they said, you know, Chet's hood, dude. Chet's like... He's like ghetto. Where's he from? I think he's from Michigan, if I'm not mistaken. Oh. Maybe from Michigan.
But
he's got some hood in him. What this person told me that was affiliated with OKC. Man. I cracked up. But I could see that attitude.
He's from the mean streets of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hey, don't sleep on Prince, bro.
Well, that's where he's born, right?
He went to high school there, too.
Oh, he went to high school? Oh, yeah. I thought he went to high school in Michigan. All right, wrong game. My bad. Minnesota. They've got some athletes.
I'm not sleeping on Minnesota.
Jalen Suggs.
Okay, what I've learned Trey about Lance, my life is that you could be in a nice neighborhood.
Joe Mauer.
Anywhere in America or outside of America.
Joe Mauer, please. Like the nicest guy ever.
You hang the wrong right turn, and you could be in a rough neighborhood.
St. Paul, the Twin Cities, man. They got some mean streets.
You're speaking like you actually know.
You don't believe a word.
That's what I'm saying. Like the mean streets of Minnesota.
Telling you, man. When we flew over Minnesota, I was like, oh wow, I wouldn't walk over there.
Yeah, the Mall of America, man.
When you flew over Minnesota from 30,000 feet, you look down. It's like, man, I am glad I am not walking around there.
It wasn't even that. Technically, we pulled in to their airport and we got off the plane, and there was this crack. You know, when you get off the plane and there's the tarmac, there was like a crack. I swear to God, whatever the degrees it said, it was 100 degrees colder than whatever it said.
What is it, -5?
It said -5. It might have been negative 500.
I woke up. Shasky goes, yo, it's time to get off the plane. I wake up. It's like, oh, we're in Minnesota?
You had to put your shoes back on.
Yeah. Did I have my shoes off then?
Yes, you did.
Of course I did.
Gross. Your Gucci slides.
It wasn't Gucci slides. Stop. I don't own a pair of Gucci slides. I'm not that bougie yet. Listen.
Got like three pairs
yet,
of that.
Yet. Keyword yet. But when I saw that snow, we were flying over Minnesota.
How many times have you seen snow?
I've seen snow plenty of times.
I've only seen it a couple of times. Yeah, been, touched it. You know what I mean? Like been in the snow. Tahoe snow. Times. Maybe six in my life.
Yeah.
Maybe five.
Whatever. I've been to Tahoe plenty of snow before. Have I traveled outside the state and seen snow? No, New York. I was out there for the All-Star game. Snow flurries was coming down. Oh, it was crazy.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That is pretty cool. That was all right. It was all right. And then the snow, you see it just piling up, and it was dirty. It was nasty. Trying to think. Any other snow? No, that's about it. Spot it. Not, snow's overrated.
Snow's overrated. Snow in the Mona Lisa. Overrated.
Snow's rated.
Man, I mean, snow's overrated.
I agree.
People always say, like, oh, we want to go play the snow.
I'm happy with snow.
No, I'm not happy with snow. It's overrated. Just
we're not hard on snow.
You know, got to put chains on the tires, dude. Like, come on, man. Oh, snow's overrated. People are like, oh, I wish Shepherd's was going to snow. No, you don't. We got too many hills for snow. You imagine people driving up and down these hills in snow? It'd be a disaster. Oh, my God. Snow is so overrated.
So I remember back in the day, we're quick aside here. Back in the day, they did, what was the guy, Sean White and them boys were doing snowboarding at the top of Pacific Heights.
Oh, yeah.
And they were coming down. Right. And me, Guido, and my dad, we were daytime drinking. This is back in my partying days.
Hell
and
yeah.
We went down to it was like sunny hot, but they had put fake snow.
Yeah.
You remember this?
Oh, yeah. And they had the X Games out here all the time.
It was a who's who of people. And we went to the top, we went all the we get to the bottom, and it's like San Quentin, Selsky, everybody. And my dad was just hanging out with them. It was a memory I will never forget. My dad said, snow in the city.
Snow in the city. Well, the way was out here for the X Games.
He was opining about in the 70s when it did snow in the city.
Oh, wow. Wow. Like 925 says, there's a ghetto everywhere.
There really is.
And I knew when we flew over Minnesota, I said, yeah, I would go into that place. Oh, that place looks a little...
Imagine, like, in the plane with, like, your binoculars looking down over Minneapolis. Like, there it is right there. I see that hood right there.
I did take a picture.
I see that crackhead on the street.
Hey, hey. There ain't no crackhead in snow.
I feel comfortable.
Dude, we flew over to go to Gopher Stadium. I was like, Shasky, look at the go to Gopher Stadium. Looks so cool. It's covered in snow.
My favorite thing to do, though, when we're up in a plane and you're looking out, other than the fact that I hate being... I don't like flying. But I look out, and I like to see the baseball diamonds. I don't know. Oh, there's something that's beautiful.
I love seeing stadiums.
About seeing the baseball diamonds.
I like seeing stadiums. I like seeing
stadiums.
So they
say I looked at the propertyclub.nyc. So this is like places that are dangerous, I guess, neighborhoods in certain cities. They're saying South Minneapolis, Bonta. You don't want to be in South
Minneapolis. You don't want to be in South
Minneapolis. South Minneapolis.
South Minneapolis is dangerous. Damn, South Minneapolis. They got some brothers out there, some brothers and sisters out there. I know some brothers from Minnesota. Let's go to Samita in Los Gatos. Let's get a Samita, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
Samita, you ever been to South Minneapolis?
I have not been to Minnesota, but, you know, I grew up in Nebraska, so I'm familiar with snow.
Hey, they got some hoods in Nebraska. We watch Belly.
That is an all-time scene.
Yes, they do. I am a Husker for life.
Shout out Tommy Frazier. He's one of my top five of all-time college football players I've ever watched.
Yep. And not for nothing, but Nebraska had a black quarterback way back in the 80s, Turner Gill, who was way before it was a thing.
Yeah, he started coaching the Buffalo Bulls for a while, man. I won a lot of money on him coaching the Buffalo Bulls. Yeah, Turner Gill was good.
Yeah. Anyway, about the game last night, the Warriors game, Buddy Hield, I think, is turning out to be one of the most low-key, brilliant pickups that the Warriors could have made. His chemistry with Steph is really, really good. You love to see it. And the Celtics, they really needed Jaylen Brown last night, because I tell you what, Jason Tatum on defense is giving me Melo Anthony vibes. You know, it's like, one of those things where it's like, why are you just standing around? Yeah. I saw a lot of standing around from Jason Tatum last night, and it really reminded me of Melo, where it was like, you know that joke, what's the one guaranteed thing that happens in sports every 4 years is Melo plays defense? It's like that. Yeah,
so. Can't you also, when I'm watching that game, I'm like, it's so, Steve Kerr was so right. His style of play didn't fit the Olympic team. Like, hello?
Not at all. I'm like, every other guy can play on both sides of the court. This guy is, you know, he's offensively a superstar. Defensively, I think, is a little bit of a liability. And I think that's why he didn't get minutes. But the other thing that's really interesting that I think we're starting to see, and, you know, we need some more games to go before we can really tell, but, you know, the Warriors might just be onto something with this 12 and 13 man rotation, because when somebody's hurt, it's next man up. And I think this might be a thing. This might be a big thing now, where other teams are going to start looking at this and say, hey, they have like a really deep bench.
Yep.
And maybe that's what we need to go with instead of an 8 or 9 man rotation. So thanks for the time, guys. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Samita. Thank you for holding it. Always a solid phone call from Samita out there in Los Gatos. And, you know, she brought up Jason Tatum. We're watching it as we talk Celtics and Warriors, and the Warriors win yesterday, 888-957-9570. Bruce Q. Frazier, assistant coach of the Golden State Warriors, will join us at 9:30. I think they're still at Boston. They may be flying to Cleveland right now, or getting ready to fly to Cleveland.
A flight to Boston?
Not flight to Boston.
Bonte, I just have a little bit of news per Adam Schefter, NFL-related. Because this has to do with the guy you've been bringing up, and we'll get right back into the Warriors. But the Baltimore Ravens are waiving defensive end Yannick Ngakoue, per source. Now, the Ravens are hoping that he clears waivers and he can go to the practice squad. Do you want the Niners to pick him up?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go get this guy. Go get him. Why not? We need depth. We need edge rushers.
If the Warriors have taught us anything, you need depth.
Yeah, absolutely. What would the Warriors do? They go get him. Yeah, I see the text. Just relax, Sasky. Relax. We see it. Focus.
Stop
I need you to focus.
It.
No, I'm saying I'm getting a lot of snow bunny texts.
Why are you getting snow bunny texts?
Size matters.
It does matter. It does.